Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Bake with a Legend offer fans of the Great British Bake Off the chance to bake alongside their favourite stars from the show. If you're planning a special birthday, a hen party, or perhaps in charge of your next work social, why not get in touch with us to discuss arranging an event for you? We also offer Bake with a Legend at Home, where one of our Bake Off alumni can come and lead a baking class in your own accommodation. Just imagine that, Howard or Jane coming round and teaching you afternoon tea. For more information, visit bakewithalegend.com or email info@bakewithalegend.com.
I must admit, I was slightly distracted by the sight of Paul squeezing the filling. It's just, I found it mesmerising, actually. That sort of, the way it went pop, out and then back in again. It was sort of like it was winking at you. Like Paul Hollywood pasty winker. Yes.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Bake Down podcast. As ever, I am joined by Howard Middleton and Jane Beadle. Howard, I know you didn't make it to week 7, and I don't mean to rub it in at all, but do you think you'd have still had the stamina to keep going for those 4 more weeks if that was what was required?
There's part of me thinks that I would. I think I would have happily gone back and made tea and done some washing up just to have been back in the tent and having that bake-off experience. But yes, I would have loved to have been baking there as well.
And Jane, obviously you did have all 10 weeks. Do you think if they did a survival of the fittest of bake-off, you had to go every week for a year, would you have survived? Would you have been there in week 52?
Yes, I would. I loved every minute of it. And I'm, although nice, because I am particularly lovely, I'm also quite determined. I don't give up. I mean, now when I go to the gym and they say, do that, but you can rest if you want to, I get to the end and I think I'd do the same with Bake Off, because actually I loved every minute of it. And what keeps you going is not wanting to miss out on any of the fun. So yeah, bring it on. I'll do 52 weeks.
52 weeks. Well, we look forward to that format of Bake Off.
Not sure what my waistline would be like at the end of it.
Every single Tuesday night. It'd be incredible. Well, thank you for everyone's continually kind reviews that have been coming in. This one came from Alana on Apple Podcasts. Despite living in the UK for the last 10 years, this is my first time watching Bake Off. I am hooked. Not only am I now invested in the contestants, I can also take a deep dive into the competition each week with Jane, Howard and Josh. I'm loving the Bake Down for the thoughtful and humorous analysis of the show, and their commentary is spot on. I can't wait to get more of the Bake Down as Bake Off goes along. Well, the lovely thing here, Jane, is that if Alana's just started watching, she's got 9 seasons to look back on.
She has. I mean, that's going to keep her going to well past Christmas. And actually, I think what it would spur me on to do is to watch series 1, which I haven't ever watched, and sitting next to
Ed Kimber.
Ed Kimber, yeah. Sitting next to Ed Kimber last week at the theatre, who was absolutely delightful, makes me want to watch his series. And then I only watched half of series two, which is the one Joe Wheatley won. So I want to watch all that again. And the thing is, I want to watch all the Howards again because now I know Howard intimately. We meet under the clock at St Pancras every week, don't we, darling? I want to watch his series again. I think it's one of those things. It's like watching home movies. There are so many people who you consider to be your friends, even though you've perhaps never met them before, that it's a real joy to sit down and keep watching. So, Alana, yeah, watch all the other series. They're brilliant, especially my series, Series 7, which was the best.
So, and Howard, you also get to meet up with a lot of the former contestants, and presumably you might... Do you remember all of their episodes? Maybe it's nice to meet people in person, make your own judgment, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I think it's lovely. And I think... It's special because you've watched it and you remember a lot of their highlights and so on. It's lovely when members of the public do that as well, when they come and they remember certain details of things that you'd almost forgotten yourself. But yeah, I think it's wonderful. You do feel as if you've been part of that kind of bake-off family, really. And I think it's great, as I say, just to meet people who've had that shared experience.
Jane, you were saying just as you were coming in, even the other week, you went and had an afternoon tea with Selassie, was that right?
Yes, so Selassie was doing tea at Duke's Hotel in London, and quite a few of us were invited. So Liam was there, Rav was there, and Selassie had made these absolutely amazing cakes. But interestingly, somebody online reminded us that in Tudor Week, Selassie asked me what it was like to live in Tudor times. So, you know, people watch and remember, and they remember things that we've even forgotten or actually chosen to put out of our minds, because he was quite rude about my age. We all meet up, and it is lovely, and lovely that viewers also remember the sort of relationship we had on screen and then see us continuing that. I think we get asked quite a lot, are you really friends? Is this all just for social media? And genuinely, our series gets on like a house on fire. I think, whenever we have the opportunity to meet up somebody who's coming into London, especially some of the ones that live a bit further afield, we all make a real effort to get together. It's just a joy, a joy.
Well, that's fantastic. Look, as ever, we've had some questions in. And actually, this one wasn't so much a question. It was sent to us by Kristen Jakella, one of our many American listeners. And she wanted your thoughts on this article in a website called The Atlantic. It's an American website. And I'm just going to pull out a quote here and read out what it said. As seasons of the show have come and gone, though the technical challenge has evolved from a basic skill assessment to a meandering tour through Europe's most arcane pastries. This isn't because the various series have cycled through all the routine baked goods already and want to avoid repetition. Note, if you will, the notorious second appearance of pita bread. Instead, the decision seems to have been made to inject drama into the Great British Baking Show, that's of course what they call it in America, by perplexing contestants to a maximal extent. Why else would producers demand that bakers perfectly create dishes they've never seen or eaten and would struggle to even spell, like dampf noodle, or flayones, or Spanish wintorte, or torta cetavelli? So I think the general point they're making here is that the technicals have become too complicated, too far removed from maybe what they were in earlier series. I thought it was interesting. Obviously, Kristen, just wanted your thoughts on that. I mean, Howard, what were your initial thoughts? Because I just sent the link to you ahead of us recording.
I think we've said before that actually there's one good thing generally about the technicals, in that nobody knows what to expect, and quite often it will be something that, if not everybody hasn't done before, at least most people will have not done before. And I think there's some comfort in that. I actually quite liked the fact that you would be doing something that was a bit of a challenge. I think what they're testing is not necessarily your knowledge completely of all these unusual pastries and so on, but actually that you can apply the skills that you've got to an unusual situation. So it is literally a technical challenge. You are using the skills that you've perhaps picked up in other bakes and seeing whether you can apply them to something which is unheard of to you.
Jane, I've got memories. Was it Damper Noodle that you had to make in your series? Yes. And that's one of the examples given here in the
Yes, Damp Noodle. It still gives me bad dreams, Damp Noodle. And I made a terrible, terrible job of it. But I'm with Howard. I think it's interesting for me watching this series and other series when they'll say, make, for instance, a Genoese or make a custard. I think they give you instructions if it's a completely obscure skill, but if it's something they believe as one of the, as Paul would put it, 12 or 13 best bakers in the country, you should have some of those basic skills. Make, what was it for those, you promised you'd bring some. The
Did I?
What do you call, what were they? The fried...
Beignet souffle.
Yes, you did say you were going to visit Howard. Did not come with those. Make a choux pastry. And I think that's what the technical does. It tests your technical knowledge of basic skills and then sees whether you can recreate something without a picture. Now, I'm of an age where recipe books very rarely had a picture, and they were brilliant recipes, but you had to envisage what you were trying to create. And this is all that they're getting you to do. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing pastries from Europe. Where do we learn or where Absolutely. Do we get all our pastry skills from? It certainly isn't necessarily from the UK. I mean, we are talking some wonderful techniques and wonderful things to eat. It's part of the joy of travel. And why shouldn't we then try and make them here? So bring on more obscure pastries, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think we should be too, is the word parochial about no. it. I don't want to be making bread pudding every week and putting my spin on it. I'd much rather be doing not a damp noodle, but a Flonus or a Spanish winter torta. And I think she goes on in the article to call it Princessa torta. Howard pointed out you've been able to buy it
in IKEA for
years. So let's not get too stuck in boring old British pastries. Oh, no, sorry, not boring old British pastries. I did buy a book on Kentish baking the other day, thinking I'm going to actually celebrate the traditional bakes of Kent. Oh, my goodness, they sounded so dull. Sorry, Kent. I'd rather be doing a torta setivelli than I would something with lots of lard in.
I think the answer...
I'm just going to upset loads of people there.
I think you've... Oh, that was wonderful. I mean, the number of people you could potentially have upset there.
That's it. Yeah. I'm going to be replaced next week by somebody who's nicer.
Kristin, I think the answer, in short, from Jane and Howard, is that we enjoy the variety of technical challenges. But thank you so much for listening and for drawing the article to our attention and for listening all the way from over in America. We've also been asking you to send us your self-raising selfie stories, and Meg has been in touch. She says, "Hi guys, firstly, thank you so much for doing this podcast. It's my favourite thing to listen to as I come home from work on the tube on a Wednesday. I've only ever met one Bake Off star, which was Ian Watters. And in the excitement as I took a selfie, my hand was shaking, and it is a terrible photo which upsets me greatly. What do you think the etiquette should be when you're taking a selfie and it's gone wrong? I was too embarrassed to ask again." How does this happen to you, where people have come up, said, "Can I take a picture?" It's not gone well, and they've wanted a second, maybe even a third attempt. How do you deal with that?
I'm quite patient, I have to say. I do say to people, "Are you happy with that?" And then they'll sort of say no. And I remember doing this once at St Pancras when I'd got a train to catch, and I'm thinking, "Please be satisfied with this now." But I think the worst thing is my partner Peter quite often offers to, if people want to do a selfie, he'll say, "I'll take a photo," and he takes an age. So my advice would be, if you do want a selfie with me, don't ask Peter to take.
What do you think the maximum number of attempts anyone's ever had with you to take a picture?
Quite often, mums will have a go as well, and daughters and sons are then very critical of what their mum's done. So it's, oh no, you've done it. Look what you've done there. So I think you could go for 10 goals at least.
Yeah. You'd stand there for 10 attempts.
Yeah.
You're very kind and patient. Jen, where do you feel the line should be drawn? I'd say 3 attempts. I mean, you can't get it right in 3. We've all got to get up.
To be honest, I've never really had much trouble with that at all. I'd happily stay. I think what amuses me is Howard saying that the daughters and the sons have to have an absolutely perfect picture. And I know my daughter is very like that too. You know, they look gorgeous and they're going, oh, no, that doesn't look right. My eyebrow looks wonky. But they never ask us whether we're happy with the photo. So we could be there looking with my eyes shut or dribbling.
I'm terrible at closing my eyes.
No, ask, and please ask again. I'm sure Ian wouldn't have minded at all. Yeah, you want to have a good photo.
So there you go, Meg. I think the answer is, if you see Howard, avoid asking Peter if Peter's with Howard to take the photo. And you've got up to even 10 attempts. So you might as well, even if you like the first one, just in the case the second or maybe the seventh one is going to go better for you, just keep going as long as you want. Well, thank you, Meg, for being in touch and for listening. And if you have bumped into a bake-off star somewhere and want to tell us your story about it, we'd love to hear it. So do email us at thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com, or you can tweet us at bakewithalegend. Well, let's look at the signature of Festival Week. It was a challenge to make 24 yeasted festival buns. The instructions were to make your version of a celebratory bread that you might find at a festival, Sandy said, such as Eid, Christmas, Hanukkah, Diwali. Each bun must tell a story. Paul clarified more than 24 festival buns. They can represent any country in the world. They can have anything in as long as it's related to a festival. He wanted to get them beautifully light, airy, full of flavour, and to pack a punch. And Prue clarified that she said, well, the most obvious one to us would be the hot cross bun at Easter. She wants these ones to be yeasted, but they could have spice in them or other flavours. She wanted to see them uniform, great flavour and texture, and to be delicious. Jane, I think you'd have liked this challenge. Is that fair? You'd have liked this challenge to make these festival buns?
I would have loved this challenge. I'm a great bun fan. The obvious one would have been the hot cross buns, which I love. I love hot cross buns. I could eat too many of them. The downside of this challenge is the 3 hours again, because usually these festive buns have an enriched dough, so you'll have butter in them, you'll have sugar in them, and that inhibits the yeast, so it's a much slower rise. So to get a really good rise, if you're going for a double proof, which all of them did, in 3 hours, it's a tricky old challenge. I mean, fortunately, it was quite warm in the tent and it looks like the weather has moved on. And of course, they've all got proving drawers in their ovens. So the challenge for this is the time, but actually the sky's the limit. I think there were some really interesting buns, especially from Henry always manages to find something that I've never heard of. Great challenge. I thought lovely, and lovely to move away from cake.
I was going to leave it to you there to try and pronounce Henry's chocolate cardamabulla. I'm not quite sure I've got that right, Howard. Are you going to correct me?
Cardamumabulla.
Of course it is. Are you familiar with them prior to walking
in?
Are you going to make some with your beignet soufflés next week for us?
I think they're normally done with cinnamon. But I think Henry had as far as I know, he'd created this cardamom version, which was probably a kind of, I don't know if it's a made up word or not, but it sounds wonderful. Cardamumabulla.
Cardamumabulla. I haven't looked it up, actually. Have you looked it up? I haven't looked it up to see whether it exists. I bet it does exist.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, it went well for him, didn't it? I mean, incredibly well with that handshake. There was a lovely moment, I thought, just going off tangent for a second, where he was asked by Noel if he's ever been to a festival, given this was Festival Week. And Noel even, when Henry said no, said, well, not even a book festival. At that point, Henry conceded he had actually been to a festival. Howard, where would you have taken this, do you think, in terms of there's such opportunity to be creative? And we saw some, as Jane was saying, some really creative ideas. Any thoughts where you might have gone with this on this challenge?
I think I probably would have gone, I would have done a bit of investigation into other buns from other countries, really. So I think I probably would have gone like Henry, and I think David as well, sort of. His were Bulgarian, weren't they? But I think a sort of European bun rather than a traditional hot cross bun, I would have been looking for something a bit unusual, I think.
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, David, as he has in many weeks at Bake Off, turning to sort of his links with Bulgaria, Jane, he made these Kozanek plates, Bulgarian Easter bread, with lemon and almonds, you know, being the predominant flavours. There was a funny moment where he said he was copying a poor Hollywood plating style from YouTube, just as Paul was sort of loitering in the back of it. I've written in my notes, all this quite suck up here. But I thought that's interesting. Do you remember at all that, you know, either of you sort of trying to look more into Paul's background ahead of going in the show and looking at his recipes or YouTube tutorials on his style?
I don't think I did. I think I did buy his book, and that's awful to admit. I didn't have it before, but no, I did buy his book just to have a look at certain techniques. But I don't remember. You don't know when you are developing your recipes. I don't think you know what their individual tastes might be. So yeah, you don't know whether you're creating something which they absolutely love or they hate, really. And I think as the series have gone on, I suppose bakers now can look back over previous ones and see whether Paul doesn't like coconut or whatever.
Yeah, but, I mean, you've got 9 series, or 10 series to look back on.
Yeah, but you'd have to be pretty dedicated to go back to everyone and look at what might please the judges and might displease them.
Yes, but possibly some people aren't. I mean, you've got 100 hours roughly of content there probably to sit and get through. Jane, Alice told us all that she'd been marking exam papers all week. Almost sounded like she was glad to be in the tent rather than marking those exam papers just to get away from presumably sort of the schoolwork she had. And she went for this sort of lemon, blueberry and almond hot cross bun glazed with the lemon curd. What do you make of her effort?
Well, going back to her marking her exam papers, 180 exam papers and 150 reports I've written down. I think it just goes to show to anybody viewing that actually these people still continue working. The contestants carry on doing their day job, and it's really hard to get not only the time off if it's filmed during the week, but also to get your practice in. Because, you know, as a school teacher, we all know that school teachers work ridiculous hours these days, probably with more pressure than they've ever had before. So poor Alice, my heart went out to her. Yes, she really did look as though she was glad to be back in the tent, and I can't say that I blame her. Yeah, the lemon curd glaze. I think the danger when you choose something like a hot cross bun is that you feel you need to really pimp it up instead of just going for a really tasty bun that you would make at home. And they are signature. They're supposed to be things that you love to bake and that your family love to eat. And trying to do the glaze with lemon curd was trying to put her stamp on it, trying to put fresh cranberries in, which are going to be quite wet in the dough. There's always the danger in a signature of trying too hard. And I think that was just a little bit going too far. I think just a straight glaze to give her that shine would have worked much better.
Well, Prue said as much, really, that she said that she felt the lemon curd glaze was, you know, not as attractive and not as shiny, maybe, as it could have been. Steph obviously got a handshake as well, which was, you know, straight after seeing Henry get one.
I'm not sure I agree with the handshakes this week.
Right. Well, you better tell us more. So, Steph, it was a zest and spice hot cross bun.
Well, I'm going back to Henry, who everybody knows I absolutely adore Henry. Why did he get a handshake? They tasted delicious, but they were irregular. Irregularity would have stopped anybody getting a handshake. So, and Steph's, well, brilliant. She went for a gorgeous bun and I have no doubt that it tasted delicious. But when they cut it open, they muttered something about fruit distribution and there is an equal amount in each side. Well, they pulled Alice up on fruit distribution. And then when I looked at Steph's, I thought, well, there's not much fruit in the middle of that. I thought the fruit distribution was not good from the bit that we saw on telly. And just bear in mind, we only see what they show us. So I don't think a handshake was necessary. I haven't tasted them, but if it was talking about has to be perfect to get a handshake,
yeah,
I didn't like that fruit distribution.
I think sometimes perhaps Paul just needs to be able to say well done to somebody rather than putting it in the form of a handshake. I think perhaps he, I don't know, maybe he struggles a bit to sort of say nice things.
And he certainly does that.
And so he just stays silent and sticks his hand out. But perhaps that's not the best way of actually complimenting someone on a good day.
Well, we better talk about Michael, of course, in this episode, given we won't have huge opportunity to do so going forward. He went for this figgy pudding hot cross bun, so it's kind of mixing Easter with Christmas. He brushed it with brandy glaze, soaked with brandy butter, but it was really packed with dried fruit, wasn't it? And there was a slightly odd stare, wasn't there, from Paul Hollywood when Michael was a bit unsure on his numbers and the distribution he was going to get. You know, it was an okay start to this week, but it didn't get him off to the best possible start, Jane.
No, it didn't. Although I would love to have had one. I thought they sounded delicious. And Paul was right when he was saying, you know, if you've got so much fruit and your rise is already going to be slow because it's an enriched dough, that the fruit is going to have necessarily weigh it down. And then when you try and weigh out, say your buns are, I don't know, 80 grams each, if, you know, 30% of that is fruit in one and 40% in another, you haven't actually got so much bread dough, so they are going to rise very differently. I'm sort of getting very technical here. He had an issue with the amount of fruit that he'd got in there, but Paul said the flavour was spot on and the spices are nicely warm. Prue said the dough was a bit tough but delicious, and I think that's probably a timing issue with they probably didn't get enough proving time for all the reasons that we've said before. But, you know, of all the flavours, I love the idea of a figgy pudding hot cross bun. So I'm going to be giving that one a go. I love dried figs. I've never put dried figs in mine. So well done. Well done, Michael, in spite of the criticism. But you were not alone in unevenness. And that going back to Henry's handshake, and I don't begrudge Henry a handshake at all, but going back to Henry's handshake, you know, if his were uneven and then Michael's were uneven, but his flavours were delicious, you know, let's have a bit of consistency, I think, judges, please.
Jane, there would be some thought that perhaps Rosie made the most interesting of all the signatures that were made. She went for this Mardi Gras Finnish Semlor Peacock Festival buns, as she called them, Namalaka, and I know you were a big fan of these.
I thought Rosie did a brilliant job. I really did. I thought she'd thought well out of the box. They were pretty. I love the idea with the peacocks, and she made a nice filling. For me, they were the winning buns. Ticked all the boxes for me. I'd like to have tasted them. And I mean, I know they said they were a bit dense, but you know what it's like if you try to cut a loaf just out of the oven.
Yeah.
I suppose maybe then judgment comes into it that as you cut it out, you compress the stuff underneath. But, you know, if we're going to mark them on creativity, and the flavour seemed really good, and they certainly looked pretty and they were unusual, I think for me, Rosie was the winner on this challenge. Of course, we're just making armchair judgments, but I just thought they really stood out for me.
Well, Paul made the point, didn't he, Howard, about how highly decorative they were and that they would stand out in a shop window and they would look fantastic there. They're probably, of everything that was made, were they the thing you'd have probably wanted to reach for and taste?
Yeah, I must admit, I tended to go for, I personally liked the stuff that wasn't perhaps so decorative. So I did like Henry's and David's. But yeah, you could definitely appreciate the effort that she'd put into the decoration on them. I think he said it was strange, wasn't it? Because Paul said that you could see these in a shop window, and then he said they're a bit flat. And it's like this kind of yo-yo of observations about people's bakes sometimes is a bit distracting, I find.
I agree. Yeah. Anyway, I thought she did a good job, and I wanted to eat them.
This week's episode of The Bakedown is in association with our friends at Seed and Bean Chocolates. Seed and Bean truly live on the wilder side of taste, creating adventurous, botanically inspired flavours using only 100% organic ingredients. If you head to their website at seedandbean.co.uk, you'll receive 25% off your purchase using the code THEBAKEDOWN when you check out. We'll move on to talking about the technical challenge now, Howard. Ironically, we were talking about the technical challenges, of course, and the article from the American website, The Atlantic, earlier. And I suspect they might have taken issue with this week's 12 Sicilian cassatelli, which, of course, are typically served at a carnival, we were told. They're pastry crescents filled with a smooth and creamy ricotta, flavoured with chocolate and orange and fried until crispy and golden. And the instruction was to make them uniform in shape and size. Paul said, it's all about getting the perfect texture inside and out. Sicilian snacks should have at the carnival. They're beautiful pastry, and you have to get the pastry nice and thin, and it's hard to get the ricotta in. If you don't roll the pastry thin enough, he said, when the fried, as soon as they hit the oil, it could burst open, the ricotta would pour out. And we did see a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. So Howard, this was only 1 hour, 15 minutes, an incredibly quick challenge to get made. What were your just observations on the technical challenge?
I think if you've not made pasta, it's tricky actually using the pasta machine. So several people, and I could well imagine me being one of those where the handle would fly off, just knowing how to put the thing together.
But did you see Henry at one point? Did he ask Sandy to help turn the handle?
Oh, to crank, yes.
Would you have been there asking someone else? That's a little bit like having an extra, a third hand. It's cheating.
I think it is a little bit cheating, but I think we'll allow really. It. Yeah, yeah.
We're not campaigning here for Henry to be kicked out. We want to make that absolutely clear. Henry can have as much help as he wants for as far as we're all concerned. Jane, have you made something similar to this in the past? I'm assuming you haven't made exactly this Sicilian cassatelli.
Oh, no, I haven't made Sicilian cassatelli, but actually I'm quite tempted to because I think they look delicious and sound lovely, and I've certainly never sieved ricotta before. I've made chorizo and basil puffs, which are exactly the same shape, but with puff pastry, and they're baked. And if you don't seal them properly, they do burst open in the same way. So it's all about the amount of filling and how well you seal them. And again, you know, how thin the pastry is. I thought they were a really nice little challenge. What I love about some of these technical challenges, they're things I've never heard of before, and it makes me want to go and make them. I'm just waiting to make those beignet soufflés. Actually, my stomach is now rumbling. I'm so hungry just talking about them. I think the challenges, technical challenges this year, have been things that I've wanted to make, and I like that. I like the idea that it's going to make me go and look them up and give them a go. I don't find them too over-challenging in a way, if you know what I mean. Mm. I was not doing them down in any way, but for an accomplished baker, some of these are things that... you do want to make at home. And these look lovely. Absolutely delicious.
They did look lovely. Howard, we were warned, weren't we, by Paul about the dangers of them splitting open or bursting open when they hit the fryer. And that was a problem certainly Alice had. I mean, she possibly wasn't alone. But there were points where she just looked almost confused and unsure about how should we be going about this. And, Paul made the point in the feedback. They weren't sealed properly, you know, had big air pockets. And Prue said, you know, over-fried. So... it's quite a delicate challenge to try and get right.
It was a delicate challenge. I must admit, I was slightly distracted by the sight of Paul squeezing the filling. It's just, I found it mesmerising, actually. That sort of, the way it went pop out and then back in again. It was sort of like it was winking at you. Like I just Paul Hollywood pasty winker. Yes, it was... No, it was. I just couldn't. I may have to go and have another look at that.
Well, it's clear what made the most impression on you this week.
Oh, Howard, I'm not sure I can go on.
Jane, I'll try and restore some order here.
Oh, dear. Okay.
David, who is just always so clean and tidy and just amazing on his bench. And he, you know, he mentioned how he had bad memories of using the fryer on, you know, one of the previous challenges, but he seemed fairly composed. He's come second in so many of these technical challenges. I need Howard, our statistical genius over there, to tell me exactly why. I think it's something like the fourth time he's come second in a technical. So, you know, he did a pretty good job there. But I've come to expect that almost from David now in these challenges.
Yes, I'm sure coming first is not far away, or I sincerely hope not, because I think David is meticulous. He's incredibly neat and has a very well-ordered bench and works through the challenge methodically. I think it just goes to show what a good baker he is. And I'm not sure he has had the full recognition for how good he is. He just quietly gets on with what he's doing and seems to have mastered a lot of techniques. I think David is a very, very good baker. I think it'll be a matter of time before that is recognised. I hope so anyway. I really like David's bakes.
Howard, we should congratulate Rosie because this was her first technical victory and you could tell how much it meant to her. It was almost a validation of her place at this stage of the process.
Yes. I mean, she felt as if she... I'd have to check, but she was saying that she'd come fifth in every one so far and then suddenly first. So I think, you know, that's great to have made that leap. No, I think they did look delicious.
So Rosie first there, David second, and Henry third in the technical. So as we were heading for the Showstopper Challenge, we of course see Paul and Prue sit at the kitchen table with Noel and Sandy, and they reiterated they thought that Henry's signature should be applauded and that it was definitely Alice and Michael fighting to avoid departure on week seven. Their challenge was to make a Keck Lapis Sarawak. I hope I've got that right. It wasn't the easiest to, but we've looked it up. And they were told it's a colourful cake which originates from the Sarawak region of Malaysia. It's often used in religious and cultural celebrations. The instruction was that their cake should display even and precise layers and be grilled. When your cake is cut and reassembled, it should form intricate patterns that run through it. They were given 4 hours and 15 minutes. Paul said this is a complicated one because they won't have made it before. There was nowhere to hide and they were going to see any problems. Prue then said, we've asked them to do a Sarawak layer cake, many layers and many colours and flavours, with a thin layer of batter in the cake tin. They've got to grill it for a few minutes, take it out, more batter, grill it, however many layers they want, and then cut into any shape they like. They've got to then reassemble those pieces of cake so they make a fantastic pattern. And they were building this up, weren't they, Howard, as something that was going to be very difficult to do. And, you know, I must say it was, as a viewer, it looked like one of the tougher ones.
I think so. You know, we've said in the past about when people say this is the most difficult challenge ever in the Bake Off tent. But I think this was a tricky challenge. I think it was difficult not only in terms of coming up with something finally that is decorative, but the actual technique of being able to grill each layer and the fact that you're building up each layer. If you burn one of those layers, basically, that's it, isn't it? You know, so it's not so bad if you burn the first layer, which I think Rosie did with one of hers. But I mean, if you burn your fourth layer, then it sort of ruins all the ones underneath as well.
I think David had lost quite a bit of cake because one layer of his burnt. I don't know how many layers at that stage, but there's quite a lot headed for the bin this challenge, isn't it?
Well, yeah, David certainly ended up being a smaller version of a celebration cake than I think perhaps they were hoping for. Sandy suggested maybe it was for her. Michael did say about how warm it was as well. I don't know if you noticed that. So obviously the temperature as the filming must have been going on was certainly getting warmer, which I guess changes the conditions in the tent. There were multiple cakes to make. Grilling is obviously something we've not yet seen this series. We've mentioned how timing can be so difficult to keep on top of everything. But when you've only got something going in the oven for what, maybe 90 seconds, 2 minutes, that's tough, Jane, isn't it? To keep on top of everything and not make mistakes, as Howard just mentioned, that would mean you've ruined a layer somewhere in the middle.
I think it was a particularly difficult challenge. Howard reminded me before we started recording this that actually there was a grill challenge. What was it that they made Nancy's year?
It was, Series 5 in the technical. They made a Schichttorte.
Careful how you say that, Howard.
I think they deliberately chosen that one, actually, because it's quite difficult to say. Yeah.
So I was doing a bit of research on this because I'd never heard of it before. And if you look online, there are the most stunning cakes and designs and patterns out there. One recipe I looked at said you can oven bake it or microwave it or steam them even, which might have been better. Obviously, the bakers have been told they had to grill it. I would have found this particularly difficult because of the ovens. Now, I have got one of those ovens at home. I haven't got the slide and glide version. I've just got the ordinary door version. But you cannot grill with the door open like many others. So you can't really keep an eye on it. And I think that makes it particularly difficult. So if they're used to a grill, ordinary grill at home, and how they move the shelves up and down to get the optimum temperature. And then you go into and use one of these ones that if you open the door, it switches the grill off and goes, shut the door or whatever to grill. I think that just added to the difficulty of the challenge. Just part of the history of what these things are.
We appreciate your history.
Well, there's just a little bit. There are two categories that they have. They have very simple layers and they have the very intricate patterns. And I think some of the bakers had simple layers enclosing the intricate patterns, which were very nice. And there has to be a minimum of two colours for it to be one of these Keck Lapis Sarawak cakes. Most of them, all of them, I think, achieved that. They are described as not just cakes, they're pieces of art. And actually, if you look at them as they're sold in shops in Malaysia, you buy slices of them. So I think at one point, Steph said it's just like a Battenberg. It isn't, of course, but it looks as though it can be like a Battenberg in that it's got various squares and wrapped in another sheet of this cake dough to make it look like that's the marzipan. So you buy them in slices. So in a way, you could say that David's were slices of cake because they were a bit small. But they are beautiful. And I'd say to anybody, have a look at them online because they're stunning and they're everywhere, apparently, in Malaysia. So although they're really obscure and not well known to us, that's us just being very British, I think. Have a look. They are stunning.
So Howard, Henry seemed very pleased with himself. They'd heard of Malaysia. You know, obviously he didn't know what Keck Lapis are, but at least he knew the country that they came from. How did you think he did overall? Because he went on to be a star baker and it seemed he had a slightly different approach to everyone else.
He did. So as well as doing the kind of traditional Keck Lapis as his base, he'd also used the cake quite decoratively. So he'd got little slices of the cake forming almost like a wreath or a ring on top, which I thought looked really effective. I think also that the thing that he'd done, which was quite impressive, was that he'd managed to get a cake which still had a kind of moist, crumbly, cakey texture to it. So whereas some of them looked amazingly sharp in terms of the layers, the judges said that they were a little bit rubbery.
Jane, who impressed you most, Henry aside, in terms of what they managed to come up with for the showstopper?
Henry aside, I think Rosie needs a mention for going for a really complicated pattern. She didn't quite pull it off, but I don't think she got enough credit for actually making an effort because the others all went for very simple patterns. So Rosie needs a shout out.
But in particular, she was going for these triangles. I mean, it looks so hard to do.
It did look really hard, especially when you're under pressure. And cutting that sort of cake, when I was reading about them, you let it cool and then you put them in the fridge or the freezer because that, even if you just put it in the freezer for a short length of time, we'll just close that crumb up and make it much neater and easier to cut. They just didn't have the time to do that. So although her dad had made her this thing that cutting the strips was really easy, she didn't have to measure, she just cut along the edge. Then trying to cut those little strips into triangle when you've got probably still a warm cake, really, really difficult.
And she, as you mentioned, Howard, had got behind in timing because you had this rather comical moment where everyone was saying, oh, something's burning. Everyone's checking to make sure it's not them. And then, of course, we see it's Rosie, and she complains that, you know, it's only been in the oven 90 seconds or something, she said, and yet it was, you know, hers who was burnt. That obviously set her back. Obviously, we lost Michael this week, Jane. He went for this Jamaican mule Sarawak-style layer cake. What did you think of his attempt?
Well, I thought it looked very pretty, you know, from us, again, sitting on the sofa having a look. It was very neat. He's very good at doing his piping, as we've seen right the way through. When looking these cakes up, very often the layers actually will be soaked with something before you then put the next layer on to bake it, because it helps keep the layer underneath a little bit softer. I just think he got it wrong. It did, maybe psychologically, the top and bottom layers, had they had more defined colours, they wouldn't have thought in their head when they're putting it in their mouth that it was as soggy, because it looked like one solid lump. You know, you think something's going to taste one way and then you convince yourself it does. Mm. I don't know. I didn't think he did that bad a job, but again, we're not tasting it.
Howard, as I mentioned, this would build up as being that Michael or Alice had to save themselves. And in the end, it was probably her showstopper that did save Alice.
Yes, I think when they were doing the review, they said that Michael was still in trouble. Rosie had sort of dropped to being in trouble, which, as we were saying, did seem a bit unfair. But Alice had actually saved herself with the showstopper.
And Jane, what did you make of Noel saying that he thought that Alice wasn't your traditional Essex girl?
Well, speaking as somebody who moved to Essex when they were 11 and lived there until I left home after university, I'm an Essex girl and couldn't probably be more Essex, because I was in Brentwood. So the only way is Essex is filmed there. I thought I'd just dust off my white high heels and dance around my handbag, which is what we used to do on Saturday night down the disco. It's very stereotypical, isn't it, Essex, I'm afraid. And it's a cheap joke.
So. Paul was impressed, though, with the Essex girl, Alice, saying that hers was incredibly neat, great detail. It tasted like marzipan and was vibrant and artistic. And Prue said the layers are so thin, so small, that it's almost like weaving. And they seemed really impressed. And she rightfully did enough to save herself.
I think she did a lovely job. It looked so, so pretty. I think once again, the judging was inconsistent. That's a very good word. Because at one point, somebody was accused of having too many gaps. And then, you know, I looked at Steph's, and no, I'm not having a downer on Steph, because I think she's absolutely lovely, but my goodness me, it looked like my front door. The drafts that would have come through the gaps on her cake were something to be reckoned with. You'd have needed a big draft excluder. But nobody really made a big deal of the gaps on Steph's, but they made big deal. I can't remember who said who. Somebody had some gaps. I'm just getting a little bit irritated with the inconsistency in the judging. I know we can't taste and we have to leave that up to them, but when you're faced with a cake that doesn't look as though it's joined up terribly well and there's very, very little criticism, you know, it's staring us in the face as viewers. But going back to Alice, I thought she did a beautiful job. I loved the decoration. I thought it was great.
Before we come on to Judge Jane, where we want to hear if you feel that they got it right, Jane, we want Howard's hump. And I know we're 7 weeks in now, so I'm ever intrigued where you're going to take this week.
It's not a big hump this week. I think it's more, it's a humpling. Yeah, it's a little hump this week. And I think it's just picking up on what Jane said, really, about some of the inconsistency. So I think particularly during the technical challenge, Steph had made the sensible decision, I think, of turning her cassatelle so that the open end was away from the judges. And Paul twice said they're all sealed. You know, he was complimenting her on the fact that they were all sealed. And we can perfectly see that two of them aren't, but he just hadn't turned it round, you know. And the other thing was, he was saying about, I think David's had lost their forking. Lost their forking definition. Lost their lost the fork definition on them. And I thought, you know, I can still see some definition on there. You know, so I think it's sometimes that I'd said earlier about being mesmerised by Paul squeezing. I think sometimes we're told things and our eyes are telling us something different.
Okay, it's time for Judge Jane. Jane, I must say, I don't give too much of my own opinion on this podcast because people want to hear from yourself and Howard. But as a viewer, I thought this week was probably the most obvious by the end of the episode where we were going to go in terms of who was Star Baker and who left. So firstly, in terms of Star Baker, it's your favourite. It was Henry.
Yes, I'm so pleased he got Star Baker this week. Do you know, he is a little ray of sunshine. So for him to have got Star Baker... I mean, he said he could leave happy after his handshake. Well, Star Baker, that's it for him. Happy forever. Yeah, I think so. I think he got it right in all the challenges. All the others had ups and downs and perhaps things that I would have disagreed with. But Henry, I think, was well deserved. I was very chuffed that he got Star Baker this week.
And in terms of who had to leave, it was his great friend, Michael, who eventually ran out of steam, perhaps.
He did. I'm going to miss Michael a lot. Yeah, perhaps he ran out of steam. It's just not his week. But, I think we're going to miss a lot of innuendo now that Michael's gone. There was a lot of talk about balls. And there was a particular shot where he's got his legs akimbo and they've shot his buns through his open legs.
Oh,
and
I thought that was David. That was David's bottom.
Oh, was it? I thought it was Michael's.
We need to identify the bottom.
We need to identify the bottom. Perhaps I misread the bottom. But I mean, Sandy did say that David had very nice buns.
Mm.
But I think Michael is very good on the innuendo and we're going to miss that lovely bit of humour, I think. Very, very fond of him. But it's always sad at any stage.
Yeah.
Especially once we've got to know them quite a lot by this... And the competition, I'm going to miss Michael.
Absolutely. So congratulations to Henry and commiserations to Michael, but a really fantastic personality and a great character and someone we've really enjoyed watching this series. Just a reminder, every Tuesday morning, we are putting out a post on our social media where we are inviting you to guess who will be the Star Baker and who will leave Bake Off. So if you want to enter, do look over at our social media on a Tuesday morning. You can find us at Bake with a Legend on Twitter or Instagram, and you can type in Bake with a Legend. You'll find us on Facebook. And I wanted to say congratulations to Teresa Maxwell for getting that right when we did that last week. She correctly predicted that the Star Baker would be Steph and that Priya would go. So we look forward to seeing Teresa at one of our upcoming classes. That's it from Festival Week. From myself, Howard and Jane, thank you so much for listening. Please do continue to tell all your friends who love Bake Off about the podcast. And if you've got any questions for us or want to tell us your story about meeting a Bake Off star, email us at thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com or you can tweet us at bakewithalegend.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.